Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back. And it is now or never. And today we're going to be going into our first part. Tomorrow's the second part, of course. But we're going to go through the first part of an interview I did last week with Bill Hermison. And I think he's going around teaching people about the jural rights and the jural assemblies. And so one of the things, and this is why American republicanism, and you know what, I couldn't have timed it better. And I had no plan in this. But as I've kind of got this content curriculum, things that we need to go through, because I have to repeat this stuff. For many people, if they, you know, don't get a chance to listen to every show, they miss parts. And so there's way too many people that do not understand our form of government. Now, our form of government currently, I make the case that we're a monarchical party, democratic, socialistic form of government. And if you really look at the way our government functions and acts, you can tell that those who you elect at your county, state, and federal level all have some eminence of monarchy. In other words, all the men and women that get elected, they all become, and they believe they are princes and princesses in this kingdom of America. They believe they're above the law. They believe that they're better because they were elected. They believe that they are your superior. And so you can't deny that that is the rampant attitude of anybody in government, that they're monarchical, that they believe that they are, you know, above everybody else. Now, every once in a while, you'll actually find good people. And the places that you find good people are usually in the dark red states. Very rarely in a dark blue state will you actually find. You can find some in blue states, you know, mediocre blue. And you know what? We actually had a really good representative in the state of Washington. His name was Rob Chase. We had this other guy that was, I will just say, he was the other side of the liberal coin. He was the antithesis of liberal control. He was conservative control. That was Matt Shea. Now, with Rob Chase was, he leans more libertarian. He's far more of an advocate for individual liberty. He was a great, he ran under the ticket as a Republican, but he was a great representative of the people. And so in most of the dark red states, you'll actually find that there's probably a larger pot of really good conservatives. They have conservative caucus, freedom caucus, liberty caucus, those types of groups where they try to separate themselves from the rest of the pack of Republicans. People do not understand the importance of electing public servants. And so, you know, there's, why is it that these guys get in? Because we haven't learned how they play this game. They really do believe that they're above us. So when we get into American republicanism, and most of you know this, that under a monarchy, they have discretion to rule, and they really do believe that they have the ability via the parties, the Republicans and Democrats, if they can get a majority vote, and that's why it's important to have a Republican majority. Well, not necessarily. If you notice, the Democrats usually vote for and vote with the Republicans in passing terrible bills. The people that are the outliers are those who are actually hardcore supporters for the Constitution. So if you can find that the Democrats are the ones that are actually siding and who they align with the most, you're going to find those people that claim to be Republicans are really not Republicans per se. Why is this? Why is it that the party is, you know, allowed to or allows these folks to represent that name and sully their name. Bottom line, in American Republicanism, we represent or we believe our representation is to represent our sovereigns. We, the people, being sovereign over most things, and our local government to be sovereign over those few things we've delegated. They deserve a voice to ensure that what they need to do is protected. That's where we've lost the understanding. Now, getting into and preparing for this interview, when people talk about, and because I kind of gave you an advance notice that this, they talk about jural assemblies. A jural assembly is a body of people that invoke some privilege or right because it is reserved to the people in a monarchy. When it comes to common law grand juries, I've taught you this over and over again. We, the people, do not have the authority in a Republican form of government. In a Democratic form of government, we have the authority to establish a grand jury. We can just go and we can start working together because that's a Democratic form of government. We do not have a pure democracy. We have a Republican form of government where we've elected and they have the responsibilities of administering the legal process. Now, they've turned their backs on common law. They've even turned their backs. So we have to get representatives that will stop turning their backs and actually turn towards the law of the land. The law of the land is common law. We need common law courts to be restored. The exit criteria of a constitutional county is when your county commissioners actually invoke common law grand juries and start using common law grand juries to dictate how the law of the land is going to work. Now, to be clear, when we look at constitutions are formed by parties, at least in our form of government. So one county can't just say we're going to completely comply to the Constitution and not abide by the same oppressions that the rest of you are. We actually have to share the pain, and we have to help educate and help bring all these other counties to restore their constitutional rights again, the right of common law grand jury, their right of true representation instead of party representation. So when we start hearing and people start telling you that you as a citizen have the citizens' grand juries and citizens' common law courts, you can't do that. Not in this form of government. You'd have to actually create a new form of government. And if you are actually creating jural assemblies and you're creating jural assemblies and courts and so forth as a body, then you are sidestepping and actually stepping outside the protections of the Constitution. And technically, as I look at it, this becomes a shadow government. I use this, and going into this interview, I was really as open as I possibly could. I wanted to hear the positions and everything else. I've given you their nationalassemblies.net, and so we've given you the website. We'll reaffirm that. What we're going to do is we're going to go into this interview. When we come right back from the break, it'll go straight into the interview. We'll do the interview, and then we'll have a little bit of overlap. You'll hear a little bit more today, and then you'll hear that again tomorrow. But I will be back to kind of do a tie to the end and try to help you start understanding where we are by the time we're at the end of this, so that you can start saying, okay, because clearly when I'm talking and I'm having an interview, it's absolutely rude for me to start reading, you know, and challenging. I'm trying to do discovery here. And so in this process of working with this good patriot, because these people are patriots, folks, they recognize our government is misaligned and not doing what it needs to do. And they're going down a path of what they think they found as the true response and answer. States and federal government and people violate the Constitution because they don't understand it. These are common mistakes. We'll be right back with Bill Hermison after this promo.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Just fine.
Okay, so you told me that during the day would be a good time. I'm presuming that this is a good time, or should I call you back?
This will work. I was just on another call. And
oh, okay.
Got off the call.
Well, great. I appreciate your time. One of the things I tried to do is I tried to do some due diligence and see if you got a website or anything else, because I'm kind of coming in blind or a little cold. I don't know really what
right.
you do.
Right.
And so it would be good to kind of talk about, you know, what it is you're doing, what is it you're trying okay. to do, and so forth. And anyway, go ahead. Tell my audience what the heck you do. I'm sorry. I'd like you to kind of fill in the blanks of, you're in Missouri, and you're doing what?
Yes. I am giving educational presentations for free all over the state on reestablishing, restoring the original republic that we lost. The Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, says that the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm answering the questions, what does that look like? Why don't we have it? And how do we restore it?
Okay.
I do have a website, AmericanCivicsEducation.org. AmericanCivicsEducation.org. And on the homepage, there's a 6-minute audio that gives a pretty good overview.
Okay. Well, go ahead and talk. So let me ask you this. In restoring our constitutional republic in your endeavors, you talk about republicanism. And so do you get into the essential or the details of bicameral legislation and why we have it?
I don't go into that details of it. What more that I'm doing is covering the process that we restore that. So in 1861, when South Carolina walked out, they literally walked out, and our Congress adjourned sine die and never reconvened. Our republic went vacant at that time. We never reconstructed. And with the Lieber Code in 1863, Lincoln put us under martial law until the people's government was restored. Well, it hasn't been restored, so we've been under martial law until that was suspended in 1871, the Act of 1871, which which created a municipal government for Washington, D.C.
So let me
reported to the federal government of the United States.
So Bill, if you go a little slower. So you covered a few different things.
Okay.
So first off, when South Carolina walked out of Congress, all of Congress,
they seceded, six days,
correct. There was formal letters when they seceded, as a matter of fact, and I've got those. That all being said, when they walked out of Congress, you said Congress went home. Congress basically adjourned, and they never. Pardon me?
Our republic went vacant. Yes.
Oh, so how is that? I'm just trying to put this into academic sense, because Congress was still in session and still meeting as these states seceded. Pardon me? Go ahead.
Congress adjourned sine die in March.
And they never convened again, ever.
Not under a republic.
So what changed the republic? Because a state seceded? So is your position that states can't secede? Is that what you're saying? That
No.
Oh, okay,
no.
All right.
No, what I'm saying is because of that activity, the republic at that time went vacant. We know that with Abraham Lincoln and the Labor Code, he put us under military rule.
Okay, so let's stop right there. So did Lincoln have the authority to do that?
Technically, no.
That's right. Okay,
that executive order was technically not valid.
Right, and he can't. So technically, if you look at the ratification debates, the militia has to be federalized. In other words, Congress has to call forth the militia. And then they have to federalize. And then when they federalize the militia and begin to deploy them, this is specified in the Virginia ratification debates with Madison, Nicholas, Mason, and others, that they can't declare martial law except to where the militia is being deployed. And once they've been deployed, they can't he can't declare martial law before that. Okay, so I agree that what Lincoln did was completely unconstitutional. And he may have caused a pause, and he may have exerted a level of tyranny, but all of that was unconstitutional. So anyway, go ahead. Moving forward, though, we never got a republic back because how?
So it remained vacant. The federal government is a it became a corporation with the Act of 1870, which allowed for corporations to be created in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
They then used that
so can I, can
in
I,
1871.
Right. Can I pause?
To establish.
Okay.
I'm sorry?
What I'm trying to do is you're going to lay out a lot of stuff, and I'm just trying to get the clarity. So you're saying that the federal government started establishing corporations.
They established with the Act of 1870, they lay down the foundation for how to create corporations in Washington, D.C.
Okay, but did they have the authority constitutionally delegated to them to do that? In other words, did the states amend the Constitution to allow them to actually change the structure of our government to a corporate form of government?
No.
Okay.
But they did it, and it's purported to be our government. So right now, we look at what we think is our government. It is a corporation.
Well, but it's an illegitimate corporation, right?
I'm sorry?
It's an illegitimate. It's like Satan coming and saying, I'm Christ. He's not the legitimate
exactly.
Christ. Okay. So,
exactly.
Keep going.
The de facto government is unconstitutional, corrupt, and unjust.
Okay. So the parts of what they're doing is corrupt, unconstitutional. It's a facade, but it doesn't
correct.
Make our Constitution and the government that's supposed to be formed illegitimate. In other words, there are certain things that they're still doing, such as the Constitution gave them the authority to lay taxes. The Constitution gave them the authority to call forth the militia or to declare war, the very enumerated powers. So they have some enumerated powers. And
Section 8.
So I'm of the opinion that we agree in lots of ways. And I think that the problem is that everything you're talking about is all usurpations. They're all violations of the Constitution, whether it's the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency or whether it's the creation of these corporations. But So if we agree on that, then what's the way forward? What is it you're doing?
The way forward is to understand that with Douglas MacArthur using the 1928 issued in 1929 Field Manual 2000-25 on citizenship, use that as a foundation for training in the original Project Blue Book, which has nothing to do with aliens. It was about restoring our republic and the Restore America plan. He trained generals. Those generals, in turn, later on in Michigan, connected with some civilians and formed a Jural Assembly. That Jural Assembly in 2010 revived our original republic.
How?
And
so how did that do that? How did that do that? Because, see, what he was doing, did he have the authority to actually do this and go and create this assembly? Because under the Constitution, you know, the federal government does things that they're not supposed to do. That doesn't mean that states should be able to do things that they're not supposed to do or influencers.
What's our First Amendment?
Our First Amendment is, if you're talking about in the Bill of Rights, our First Amendment basically talks about the restrictions on the federal government not to make it establish a church, restrict freedom of speech, religion, religious worship, and so forth and so on. Right?
And the right of the people to peaceably assemble.
Okay, but
petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Absolutely. Okay, so what?
And that is an unalienable right. It's
okay, so hold on here.
It existed.
So
prior to
you didn't tell me that he actually petitioned government and then restored the government by there's a term for it, ipsy facto or whatever they call it, where the federal government actually conformed back to what they were supposed to do. Is that what happened?
No, the federal government's deception. It's a corporation. This has nothing to do with the federal government.
Oh, okay.
What this is reestablishing our original republic that we lost in 1861.
Right. Okay. So it sounds like he formed a government then.
Well, okay. We have to define terms. What's government? Government is of the people, by the people, as a representative form of government, as a republic.
Okay.
That's what we were given. And the way that works is assemblies of the people were the electors. They elected the officers of government.
Yeah, but what he's doing,
and they monitored them.
But what you're talking about isn't reestablishing and recreating. It's a shadow government. What you're talking about, really, he just created a shadow government, very similar to the assemblies of safety, committees of safety, and those things when the colonies actually started creating shadow governments underneath the British crown. Right? Is that what you're talking about?
GR, yeah. For some reason your audio is breaking up. I can't understand you.
Oh, okay. So let me slow down. During the Revolutionary War, as we were standing up, we started creating assemblies under the British Crown. And it sounds to me like what you're saying was these assemblies were created in a similar fashion underneath or outside of the purview of the federal government in organizing a new form of government. Is that not correct?
Declaration of Independence was done by an assembly of people.
Well, it was actually done by a representative body of the colonies, and those delegates actually worked together as representatives of these different assemblies of, again, because if you look at the Tory Acts. The Tory Acts identify councils, assemblies, and committees because each state, each colony had different names for themselves as they started organizing these Republican forms of government underneath. These were shadow governments underneath the crown. And then they created this national shadow government called Continental Congress. And in Continental Congress, the representatives of these colonies created the Declaration of Independence. So what you're talking about sounds very similar to what they did. He's created a shadow government. He didn't actually restore our Constitutional Republic.
Who's he?
MacArthur? Is that the? I believe that's the person you were
referring to. Well, MacArthur started the process. It was generals taught by him that got with civilians in Michigan and taught them about what our republic was all about. That field manual, 2000-25, is all about citizenship and a republic. It was written by Harry Fuller Atwood. You can read some of his other books. He explains a republic and a representative form of government.
Okay, but it sounds to me like this is a shadow government. It's not really restoring our hybrid constitutional republic that was established by the states and which grew into a much larger union up to the Civil War. Is that not? I mean, I don't see what they did was actually legitimate, and I don't see what the federal government's doing is legitimate. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I understand where you're coming from. Okay. I'm just telling you that that's not correct.
Okay. So
we the people under the Declaration of Independence have the right to alter the government.
Sure.
We have a right to restore the republic that we lost, and we do that through we the people in lawful assembly. We are still in an interim status, formed and functioning, but not operating.
Yeah,
can't yet. We cannot get in and trespass on the de facto government at this point.
So
not yet.
I disagree. So let me ask you this. Did the states
I have been on your website, and I have looked at what you're doing.
Okay, good. So at any point in time since the states seceded, because there were several states that actually left the union. So in other words, they weren't a part of the union. And so at any point in time, did the remaining states set aside the Constitution, say we're no longer going to hold you to this U.S. Constitution for the United States that we ratified in 1789 and formed this government? At any point in time, did the sovereign parties of that compact authorize the setting aside of the Constitution?
Okay. I'm sorry. You're still breaking up a little bit.
Oh, okay. I apologize.
I think what I heard you say is you're asking about the southern states' authority to do what they did?
No. So I apologize. I'll try to speak a little slower. The southern states seceded. We agree on that. And I think everybody can see that. There are people that say that they didn't or they couldn't leave the union. But
they could, and they did, and they then formed their own constitution.
Well, actually,
and then they, under common law, they told the federal troops to get out.
So,
because you, under common law, you cannot trespass.
So
federal troops refused to get out, so they seized forts. But then we had the Baltimore riots, and it was actually the Baltimore riots where federal troops were in conflict with anti-war protesters, where people were killed. And that was really the start of the Civil War, not the shelling of Fort Sumter.
So the beginning of the divide of America started with the secessions, I believe. And it also initiated and created a catalyst with Lincoln, because Lincoln was bound and determined not to allow this to happen as these states left, which is why he basically committed all of these atrocities against the Constitution in declaring martial law and so forth. But but my question is this. At any point in time,
did the states remaining in the union at any point from then even to now, have the states ever once authorized the setting aside of the Constitution to no longer be applicable to allow the federal government to run rickshaw and do whatever they wanted to do?
This, not that I'm aware of, the states have done it by, in effect, giving consent, thinking that it is our government.
Correct. Okay.
But from 1871, it was total deception.
By the federal government.
And our all of our state governments are corporations.
Okay.
Our cities are corporations.
I understand.
They are dead entities, and they cannot contract with a living person.
I understand that. But the only way that they can do this legitimately is via an Article 5 amendment. Is that not correct?
I'm sorry. I'm not sure. With an Article 5 amendment to...
to the U.S. Constitution, did the states amend the Constitution to allow this for themselves and the federal government to create these corporation governments?
No.
Okay. So my point is, the only way things can happen legitimately within the Constitution, according to the law of the land, you must amend the Constitution to do it.
Right.
Okay. So what that means is, even though the states went along, they didn't constitutionally go along. They may have been coerced. Some of the states may have been completely duped. As a matter of fact, there's all sorts of evidence that proves that Marshall and many others duped the states into allowing the federal government to do things. And actually, as a precursor to the Civil War, the Department of Home was created, and as states kind of said, hey, can you do this? Absolutely. They basically told them, we can do this, and this is what we're going to do. And they never stood up, but that's what they should have done. They should have stood up and held them accountable. But by this point in time, in 1849, they didn't even understand the Constitution anymore. They didn't even understand republicanism and bicameral legislative
exactly.
bodies.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
So I get that, and I really agree that it's very important that we start educating, and I also agree regarding the right of assembly, peaceable assembly, and the petitioning government for the redress of grievances. That is our mechanism of how we have to get our local government and state governments into compliance to the U.S. Constitution. So if you've been at my website, you may not have seen the bill that we have in South Dakota. Did you get a chance to see that?
I think I did. I don't know that I remember the details, but I did spend some time on it.
Okay,
good.
I
think I understand what you are doing.
Okay,
and
great.
Of everything that I have seen up to this point, you are the closest to having the answer.
Where we differ
uh-huh. is that you're still dealing with the de facto, which is not really our government. It is deep state controlled corporation.
Yeah, so
that in no way has our interest at heart.
So
the real government has been sitting there waiting for us to restore it.
So Bill.
I think that's where we differ.
Let me look at this metaphorically, or let me project how I see things metaphorically. We actually have a legit framework of government, and it's supposed to be doing very specific things. And let's just call that a body of government. And now the body of government is possessed by an evil spirit that has taken on all sorts of forms and done all sorts of things. In other words, we have a legitimate government that is under possession of all sorts of perversions and evil things. We have to basically exorcise all the evil out of the body. Our states are still legitimate. Our counties are still legitimate. Our federal framework, it's still legitimate. It's just functioning in a perverse way with powers that it does not possess.
Correct.
Okay. And so if you look at the bill
that we have in South Dakota. It's also in Wyoming, too. It's HB, I think, 0212 in Wyoming. And if you're interested, I'll send you the link to it. But these bills, what these bills will first do, because the first thing a state has to do is a state has to definitize the Constitution and declare to their sibling states that they no longer acknowledge, recognize, or will listen to any, you know, I'll just call it babbling from any court or the federal government regarding the annotated Constitution, that they only recognize the original text of the Constitution was ratified by the 13 states and all 28 amendments that have been ratified. Because as I look at it, nobody can prove me wrong on this, none of those amendments cause any harm to the states. Even the 16th Amendment doesn't really cause harm to the states. The 17th Amendment...
On the face of it. 17th Amendment does, because it takes away the legislature's right to establish the senators.
So here's the beautiful thing. If you've been on my website, I have an article there that the 17th Amendment can be rescinded. It's the only amendment that's actually open for rescission. And so if you read this article, in 2010, Delaware, who in 1913 formally rejected the 17th Amendment, in 2010, under Biden and the Obama administration, they actually got Delaware to change their position formally, and the federal government accepted their change to count it as a ratification for the 17th Amendment. In so doing, because I've talked to constitutional lawyers, when the door swings, it has to swing both ways. In so doing, they've opened the door for other states to now change their position. There was only one other time where an amendment was being, where states were attempting to rescind an amendment, which was the 14th. And the federal government never accepted the rescissions of those few states that were trying to rescind it. And so we actually have a real opportunity, but technically the 17th Amendment never takes the sovereignty from the state. It only takes the state's suffrage if the Senate chooses not to follow who they're supposed to be, because it's clear that the Senate is supposed to be supporting the policies of the state. That's who they're supposed to represent. Even though they're elected by the people, it never changed what they were supposed to do and who they're supposed to represent. But bottom line is, he who pays the piper calls the tune. And this is why the Senate has been perverted, because they're no longer accountable for their seat to that state legislature. So we do have to restore that. I agree. But it's not a deal killer, because the states still have their full sovereignty. The states can step in at
any... Well, the states still have their full sovereignty. We agree. However, in your argument, you are still dealing with the de facto. Everything after the original 13th Amendment is null and void, because it is the de facto corporation, not our original republic.
So actually,
you're
de facto.
The
so
original
the,
thir-
so when was
of the original 13th Amendment?
So when was the first 13th Amendment ratified?
Okay, it was proposed. It was passed in 1810. It was ratified by Virginia, the last state needed, in 1819. When they republished the laws of Virginia, including the U.S. Constitution and its amendments.
All right,
it included the 13th Amendment.
So
in 2005, records were authenticated that showed that the governor of New Hampshire in 1812, had actually sent in documents proving that Virginia had ratified. So technically, we had all 13 states necessary to ratify in 1812.
Correct. Okay, so that's
and
fine.
So the 13th Amendment is the law of the land.
Okay, so...
No title of nobility or honor. You cannot serve in office.
So the following 13th Amendment, was that under the corporations?
13B?
Correct.
13B was the one that Lincoln signed and only Illinois ratified.
Understand. Well, so are you telling me that that wasn't ratified by the other states? And are you telling me that the 14th Amendment wasn't ratified by any other states?
the 13C, the one on slavery?
Yes.
No, that was not properly ratified.
And so, and you're saying that's the same thing? Because both of those amendments were prior to the corporations, correct?
I think, well, yes. But okay. I think Paul Venable agrees with me on the 13th not being ratified.
Well, so there were two attempts of the we'll call 13B and a 13C amendment, right?
There was, right. The original 13, which was in 1812. Then we had the 1861 13B, which left slavery to the states.
No, actually,
Lincoln, so ratified by Illinois.
So actually, the that the,
third, amen- the last one, which is 1865, which is a prohibition on slavery.
Right. Okay. So, correct. I understand. So you're actually right. I thought you were kind of mistaken, but no, you're right on that. So the prohibition of slavery. And the 14th Amendment, so the two that we see is the 13th that everybody kind of sees in their Constitution book, the 13th and the 14th, those were prior to the corporations, correct?
Let's see, 14th was, yes, but
okay.
Have you ever heard of changing election laws just before an election? That's what the Reconstruction Acts did. And we were under military control there. I believe who was president during the time, he wanted to veto those Reconstruction Acts, and he had good reason for it.
Okay, so, but bottom line is, the evidence is actually in that the 14th Amendment was ratified, and there's a lot of people that have a problem. And even the 13th was ratified. The first 13th, the Lincoln one in 1861, was not.
No.
Right.
No, the first 13th is 1810.
I'm talking about the Civil War first 13th. You're right. You're right. So actually the technical 14th and 15th, and I don't want to confuse everybody, but my point is this, that if we actually assembled today based on the arguments of the 14th Amendment going through the congressional globe, there's no there that tells people that the United States citizens became chattel or anything like that. That all came later in the Organic Acts and when they started creating corporations and reinterpreting the actual intent. Because I've read through the 263 pages of the Congressional Globe when they debated the 14th Amendment. So I know for a fact that when we really look at the 14th Amendment, and this is why I say I don't see any problems with any of the amendments that it steal or actually derail or pervert the concept of our hybrid constitutional republic by the framers' design. As a matter of fact, I see the divine hand of providence in the 14th Amendment because of Section 3. And more importantly, Section, I think it's 5? I believe it's Section 5 or whatever the last section is. That actually laid the groundwork for forcing. This is where Britain had to come in and play this game, which is why they were coerced. And we went down this path of corporations was because of the 14th Amendment. You know that, right? Because right there at the bottom of the 14th Amendment, it says that the United States government will not assume or pay any debt according to the Southern Rebellion. In other words, any of the Southern states' debt, when they came back into the Union, they did not accept that debt. So bottom line, right. It became a issue between the states and Britain and these other foreign nations. And by so doing, what this did was it opened up the door for Britain to say, well, we have to start figuring out how to undermine because we want our money back, because they did everything they could and they've always been working. And they finally, in 1870 and 71, they successfully started penetrating and taking the control. They already had the Bar Association and they were starting to permeate into America. And that's when we basically, I'll just say, we had politicians do things they had no authority to do. Period.
Right.
Okay.
We had no bar associations until after the Civil War, until after they got rid of that 13th Amendment.
Well, actually,
the Bar Association was
already coming into America, which is why the original 13th Amendment was being passed.
Right, but that was the IBA. That was the British, the Crown. Crown created.
Yes.
We didn't have bar associations, you know, like the American Bar
Association. I understand that, but who controls the American Bar Association? Okay, so it's kind of like the UN is just a remake of the League of Nations.
Right.
Okay. It doesn't sound like we're arguing at all. It just sounds like the way we've been informed, we've obviously got different sources. Some. I mean, everything that you've cited.
My feeling is that if you were to research this and fully understand what's going on with the Jural Assembly and restoring our republic, you would be a powerful, supportive voice to help reestablish
in
our country.
So what?
Because you are a constitutional scholar.
So tell me more about this Jural Assembly, and how do you spell that? Is that J-U-R-A-L?
Yes, Jural, lawful.
Okay.
It's the lawful assembly under our unalienable rights, the people to assemble. We can assemble, and as an assembly, we can exercise our sovereign rights from the assembly of the people. We can select the grand and petit juries. Right now, juries are under the control of the corrupt de facto.
Okay, so...
Look at U.S. versus Williams, where Antonin Scalia says, the grand jury is essentially a fourth branch of government. It sits above the Constitution, and it belongs to the people. The people's de jure grand jury has the ability to act. It can enforce laws and remove people from office.
Right.
It is the tool of the people's assembly.
Right. So actually, one of the things that they did that I think way too many people undermine, and I think maybe I can help a connection with you, is in the design of the Constitution, who are the enforcers of the Constitution when it comes down to who has to actually enforce these federal laws that they create? Well, the bottom line of that is, because we're going to go into a break now, the bottom line is we're going to get back to what his response is and how we kind of ferret through some of this. But at this point in time, I'm in the midst of an interview process, and we're going into break, so I'll have to finish my thought and kind of wrap this up for this show, and then we'll help set the stage for you tomorrow. But we'll be right back after this.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so we're basically bookending. This is the end of the show, and we've got half of the interview done. And the question I pose is, who is it under the Constitution that has the responsibility of enforcing the compact? See, one of the many things that we kind of cover, I brush over, but I covered this very significantly in this show. The federal government does not have the constitutional authority to enforce its own laws. The framers were very clear as they started delineating what a standing army was. A standing army was not a military apparatus. A standing army was the ability of the federal government to be able to enforce its laws, which is why they designed within the compact the requirement of the militia to execute the laws of the Union. Now, to be clear, I made a mistake in referring to the 14th Amendment when when I pointed to Section 5. Technically, in the 14th Amendment, the appropriate section is actually Section 4 that I was really referring to. And so Section 4 states this: the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for service in suppressing the insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned. But neither the United States nor any state shall assume or pay any debt or obligation incurred in aid of insurrection or rebellion against the United States, or any claim for the loss or emancipation of any slave. In other words, there was no reparations. None. And as a matter of fact, if you understood reparations, when Britain paid reparations, the reason they were able to get beyond the healing of freeing their slaves was the slave owners were given money by the government to basically replace the, you know, whatever the perceived value was, some intrinsic value for the loss of their property. As wrong as it was that people be the property of others, the government gave them money to help compensate so that they would have an influx. The reason why is they had an influx in income. This was free money that they were given to turn around and actually pay for upcoming labor so that they could actually get on top of and maintain labor, because all of a sudden the labor was ripped out from underneath them, this their source of labor. Okay, so if it's free labor, now they have to pay them. So they gave them, I think, a British pound for every head or something like that. And that was a lot of money back then. I mean, you know, people lived, you know, very comfortably off of a pound. I mean, if you look at how much people were spending on rent, food, and everything else, a pound would go a long way. Bottom line, we're going to get into the 14th Amendment. We're going to get into how the 14th Amendment has been erroneously challenged, but there's a lot of big ruses out there that have really, I'll just say, derailed the essence and the purity of why the 14th Amendment was required. If you believe the Declaration of Independence was an instrument that was, as I do, an epoch, it was a change in the course of the events and history of mankind. Now, people don't like me saying mankind, so that's good. I'm offending people by using that word. You know, whether it be women, feminist, or, you know, the woke society, regardless. The Declaration of Independence was an epoch within mankind. And what that means is that the only way we really finalized what that epoch was, where all men were created equal, the 14th Amendment moved us in that direction finally for the first time as a nation where all people could be free. You got to remember, it was England that imposed this concept of only blacks could be slaves. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. You'll love our next episode.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.